Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is Lieutenant Lori Schwartz. Hi, Lori.
All right. Hi. Good to be a lieutenant. Excited.
Everybody's an officer. Everybody's at least an officer. That's nice enough to come on the show. This is your first appearance on the show. So, you know, you have nowhere to go but up, Lori.
I'm not going to
bust anybody down to non-com status. So no problem there. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no problem at all. So we're here to talk about season four, of course, episode 21, Smilin' Jack. It originally aired on February 3rd. 1976. But before we get to the episode in question, Lori, I have to ask you, since this is your first time, how did you become a fan of MASH?
Well, I became a fan of MASH when I was probably about 9-ish, which is, I didn't quite get it at the time. I didn't quite know what I was watching.
9-year-olds love the Korean War. No.
Yeah, I mean, I think I vaguely thought at that time that it was Vietnam. You know, my parents would go square dancing, and I would lock their bedroom door, climb up on their big bed, and watch whatever reruns were on. And so it was always like one of the Newharts and then MASH. And so that's mm-hmm. how I got started. And then, you know, I watched episodes over the years, and it slowly dawned on me what I was watching. And, you know, now, of course, I've seen the whole show through too many times to count and absolutely love it. But I get a kick out of the fact that it started with a 9-year-old me.
Do you have any idea? Can you remember what about the 9-year-old you found it so compelling?
I don't remember being super into any specific character. I remember laughing a lot. I think it just made me feel things, honestly. And I just remembered that fondly and kept watching it. And I love history. I was a history major. I'm an archivist now. And so I love history. And I think I slowly started to learn what was going on. Like, you know, the first realization, oh, it's the Korean War, you know, when I was much younger, and then slowly picking up more and more.
Right. So as you get older, of course, you're picking up all the references and understanding things
yeah.
that you never did the first couple times around.
Exactly. And my grandpa was, he entered the army during the Korean War. And, you know, so I think that also kind of intrigued me a little bit.
Oh, it had to have. Now, did he ever tell you stories about his time then?
He didn't. He died when I was almost 4.
So
everything I know about him comes from my mom and aunt, but he was apparently a delightful, fun, loving, amazing guy. And he, you know, when he went into the army, he wasn't sure. I don't think he knew he would stick around, but then he ended up, retiring. So,
wow. So he became a career man at that point.
He did. He ended up wow. Retiring as a lieutenant colonel when he went blind. He had diabetes, and so he eventually lost his sight.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. But, I mean, wonderful, wonderful man. So.
Wow. Okay. And, of course, that is going to fit in perfectly with the episode that we're going to be talking about tonight.
Indeed. Indeed. And my uncle was also – my uncle went to Vietnam. He, of course, too young to go to Korea, but he was stationed at an airfield there, and when he came home, he found out – he had diabetes, and he always wanted to be a pilot. So I think that's why I'm like, oh, Smilin' Jack's my episode. So
yeah. Oh my Lord. Yeah. I mean, good Lord, that's amazing. It's fun. It's funny to me. You mentioned that you also watched Bob Newhart, because
yeah.
that was another show for adults.
Uh-huh.
It was not a kid show. So even obviously at 9 years old, your tastes ran a little contrary. Yeah, you're obviously an old soul, because at 9 years old, you're like, oh, I love that show about the psychiatrist, you know, you're like, what? You know, like most at nine, I mean, I watched MASH at 9, but I also watched The Incredible Hulk and Dukes of Hazzard too. But I mean, you know, that's just very funny to me that at 9 years old, you're like so excited to
yeah,
a little girl's like, oh, Bob Newhart. Oh yeah.
I think I was a bit strange, but that's okay.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So, all right. Well, awesome. That's great. So as I said, we're here to talk about Smilin' Jack. It originally aired February 3rd, 1976. It was written by Larry Gelbart and Simon Muntner, and directed by Charles Dubin, a name making its first appearance on MASHcast, and will be very important to MASH's history as we go on, and we'll talk about that shortly. So the 477th gets a visit from Smilin' Jack, played by Robert Hogan, a hotshot chopper pilot who is working on attaining the record of Chopper Pilot of the Year and they're bringing in the most wounded. Jack visits Hawkeye in OR and then asks out a nurse. He then visits his old friend, Colonel Potter. Potter and Jack talk about old times and work out a trade for some supplies. Before Jack leaves, though, Potter notices an old scratch on Jack's hand that he says he patched up months ago. Jack dismisses it and leaves. Later that night, Jack is having drinks in the Oak Club with Hawkeye and BJ, and he's hustling them for drinks by pulling off a trick involving a hypodermic needle. The jovial mood is broken when Potter arrives, officially grounding Jack upon completion of a physical. Hawkeye and BJ do the workup, and Jack seems in good shape, except he's unwilling to give them a urine sample. He's so hostile, in fact, that doctors bluntly ask him what Potter suspects. Jack then fesses up. He's got diabetes. Hawkeye and BJ try and press upon Jack the risk he's being taken up in the air while having diabetes. Jack insists that no one is grounding him. No one. Later, Jack jumps in his chopper and heads to Battalion 8 in an attempt to pick up 4 wounded soldiers at one time, therefore beating the record in what he knows will be his last chance. Colonel Potter tries to get him to land, but Jack won't listen. He does manage to bring 4 wounded back to the 477th, setting the record. Jack is thrilled to have set the record, only to see his rival, Dangerous Dan, come in, carrying even more wounded, once again taking the record. Jack, knowing when he's beaten, hands over all of his flying credentials to BJ and ruefully accepts his fate. Okay, so Lori, smiling Jack. I mean, you talked about, you know, you had these stories you heard about your uncle. Did you know any of that stuff when you, can you remember seeing this one and it resonated, or was that later on?
That was later on, I think.
Okay. So this episode, as I mentioned, is directed by Charles Dubin. This is his first MASH credit. He would go on to direct 44 episodes.
Oh my gosh.
Of the show. He continued to direct episodes up until the final season, and you can even see him in the reunion specials, both reunion specials that they did. So, I mean, this was really the beginning of a long, long career he had with the show. But overall, I mean, we're going to talk about it scene by scene, but overall, like, what's your general feeling about this episode?
I really like the episode, you know, like it has little funny bits throughout, but I thought it was just so poignant with the, you know, the story of the soldier who wanted to go home and the, you know, but couldn't, and the pilot who didn't want to, but had to. And, and it had some typical sort of MASH lines that were really also poignant about war. I liked the whole package.
Yeah, there's a whole other subplot, which we'll talk about in a moment, which featuring a wounded soldier named Owens, who, as we talk about, keeps getting wounded just enough to have to go to the 477th or go to one of the hospitals, but not wounded enough that he gets sent home. So he keeps getting sent back to the front, which, of course, Frank is delighted delighted by Owens's bravery, his by proxy bravery. But yeah, as you see, Smiling Jack wants to stay in the war and can't, and Owens wants nothing to do with it and can't get out. And so, yeah, there's this wonderful dichotomy you've got going on here about these two people that are having these parallel experiences. The show opens with Owens and some of their soldiers in a battle scene. MASH probably didn't, even though it was a hit show, probably didn't have the biggest budget in the world for battle scenes, but this is a fairly well-staged battle scene by Charles Dubin. The explosion looks fairly powerful when it knocks Owen off of his feet and stuff, and we see that he gets wounded. So, and then there's a scene again at Battalion 8 where they call in radar, they call in the choppers. We see again the actor playing Owens is a young man named Dennis Court. He was in a bunch of movies. Not a lot of TV, but actually has a lot of movie appearances. He was in a disaster parody movie called The Big Bus. He was in Oh God with George Burns. His final credit is the classic schlock movie Angel, featuring the young girl who was the honor student by day, prostitute by night. And he also has a small appearance in one of my favorite films of all time, Albert Brooks's Modern Romance.
Nice.
For anyone who's seen that movie, he plays the vitamin store clerk, who immediately sizes up Albert Brooks and manages to sell him on a bunch of crap that he doesn't need because he knows that Albert Brooks has just broken up with somebody. So he has a brief appearance there. But so we see Owens, and he gets picked up by the chopper, gets picked up by Smiling Jack, and he's brought into the 477th. And that's where we meet Smiling Jack, played by Robert Hogan, I was there, he said Owens. Robert Hogan just passed away this year.
In
2021. He had a very long career in TV and movies. He was in shows like Alice, St. Elsewhere, The Wire, Law & Order, Barnaby Jones, Operation Petticoat. And the other fun fact about him is the show Hogan's Heroes is named after him. He was friends with the producer, the showrunner of Hogan's Heroes, and so he named Colonel Hogan after Robert Hogan. So there you go. This is a little bit to immortality. That dubious show was named after him. I wonder, he's probably pretty happy about it.
That's pretty great. I mean, like, this actor, he kind of always had a twinkle in his eye and just like a great smile. So he's very charismatic. So that doesn't surprise me, actually.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that they sort of would establish throughout MASH is that the chopper pilots are kind of the big men on campus in the war. The nurses, you know, kind of throw themselves at him. There's even that, of course, the season 5 episode where the nurses sing that song about, you know, forgetting about doctors, chopper pilots, they'll get you off the ground.
And of course, right.
Yeah, I mean, how could they not be? They're exciting. They're jumping into their little choppers and flying off and rescuing wounded and bringing them back. But you're right, Robert Hogan does particularly have a really great glint in his eye. And it is a very charming performance. And that's why he's probably able to get away with some of the stuff that he gets away with, like completely defying Colonel Potter's orders later on.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes.
So there's the scene after, and we established that, of course, Hawkeye knows him and they talk about, you know, is he going to be okay after a ride with you? He may survive. And then there's the scene in the OR. I love when Hawkeye is operating on the guy and he sort of chastises Frank because he says, like, he talks about we're working on a busted femur. And then Smile Jack comes in and he's like, busted femur, that's simple. And it's like, he's just like, oh, he's seen so many wounds. He's like, whatever. And then he takes a picture and then he starts talking to the nurse, and it leads to one of the funniest double entendre jokes probably MASH ever got away with, because he takes a picture and he talks about he's very superstitious, because he talks about that, you know, he takes a picture of all of the people he's brought in. And if he takes a picture, it means they're going to live. And Hawkeye says, like, an idiot, I went to medical school. And he talks about Hawkeye says, how many is this going to make for you, Jack? And it's after he talks to Nurse King. He talks to Nurse Kathy King. And clearly there's a little bit of a spark there between the two of them. Mm-hmm. He says, see you around. And she's like, unless the war ends. So Nurse King is making it pretty clear she's interested in Smiling Jack. So then Hawkeye says, how many will this make for you, Jack? And he says, 839. Dangerous Dan's got 842. I need 3 to tie. And they cut to Frank going, that's disgusting. And I will say, as a kid, I didn't get that joke for the longest time. I didn't know what Frank was talking about.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't have a clue, I'm sure.
Yeah. I was like, what? I mean, and then, you know, of course, I got older. And I'm good. It's going to end up being probably my favorite line, although it's not a line. The look of how aghast Hawkeye is when he realizes what Frank thinks they're talking about. And he just looks utterly like, what? Where? We're talking about the wounded, Frank. I love – he is so horrified that yes. Burns immediately went to the filthiest conclusion he could come to.
Classic. And then right after that, what doesn't Smiling Jack say? Major, smile.
Mm-hmm.
and Frank just smiles like they haven't just had this whole exchange.
Yeah, he goes on this whole rant about, you know, I'm going to put I'm going to put the nurse on report at the very next smirk, and I'm not here to stand around and attend this little coffee clatch. And then, he forgets himself when Smiling Jack asks him to smile, Major. And as you say, Robert Hogan, Smiling Jack, is really quite charming.
Yeah, you got to smile for him. And yeah. I mean, this kind of ends this whole. I really loved this whole sequence. Like, I don't remember seeing, you know, from injury to the MASH, that whole sequence, a whole lot, to the battalion aid and to, you know, we see bits of it in MASH all the time, but in fourth season, I'm not sure we'd seen the whole, you know, the whole sequence. And I loved that. And hearing Radar's voice was a kick on the radio.
Right, right, right. You get to see the whole process of somebody being wounded, then taken to battalion aid, what they do in battalion aid, and then they take them over to MASH. So following that scene, there's a scene in post-op with BJ, where he is checking on all the patients. Now, this scene was often, for some reason, cut in syndication.
Yeah.
This was a scene that I generally did not see until the DVDs. And it's an interesting moment because BJ chooses to flirt with Margaret, but he's not really flirting. I don't really believe that he's really flirting. I think he's doing it just to sort of make her feel uncomfortable because he goes to visit Owens and he sees that laying on Owens' lap is a comic book. Unfortunately, we don't get to see the comic book. I'm always a nerd for that kind of stuff, but we don't get a close enough shot. But apparently, at least according to BJ, it's a Superman comic book because he talks about Lois Lane. And then he says to Margaret, I know I'd recognize you if I saw you in your underwear and a cape. And it's a very unlike BJ thing to say.
It really is. And the look on his face is just kind of ambiguous, I think. It's really weird. And then, then it turns into a joke, of course. I thought that was weird.
Yeah, I mean, Frank comes in and he's like, what are you guys talking about? And then BJ doubles down, seeing the major in her underwear. And Burns is like, why would you want to do that? And of course, not getting it at all. But yeah, I always felt like BJ was never attracted to Margaret in any way. Of course, he's married anyway, but he was just flirting just to kind of make Margaret feel weird and just being goofy. Hawkeye's definitely rubbing off on him.
Yeah. They're doing the rounds and he's just kind of feeling a little saucy.
Yeah. We do now, like I said, we do get to see on Owens' lap a couple panels of the comic book, but I was not able to make it out. If any of you out there that listen to MASHcast are comic book nerds like myself, and you can figure out these panels, please let me know. Write into the website and let me know, because I've always fascinated what these comic book props are. So anyway, after that, Frank comes in and he reads Owens' citation that he got a Purple Heart, and he's big on giving him the Purple Heart. And Frank, of course, has a line where he says, I would kill to get a Purple Heart. Well, we know Frank has two already from fake wounds, but he's got them. I mean, now the one they gave to that baby and stuff. But nevertheless, like, Frank's already gotten the two citations, so clearly the writers forgot about all this. But we see that, you know, Burns loves bravery, especially when it is not his own. And he is, like, he's so proud of this Purple Heart. It's almost like it's his, even though it's not. It's Owens's. And Owens doesn't really even seem to care.
No, he wants to sleep, and clearly he does not care.
Yeah, and it's like, Frank's like almost taking bows, you know, for Owens, and Owens is again not interested at all. So then we have the scene moves into Potter's office, and we have Potter and Radar, and Potter is dictating a letter, and I love all this stuff because we know obviously that MASH, like, there are tons of adventures of MASH, of the 477th, that we never saw. There's episodes that we never saw. But nevertheless, I always like it when we hear about things that we never saw. And so Potter is apologizing to a general who is visiting for saying, for your recent visit at the 477th. I agree that it was wrong for Captain Pierce to show up an inspection wearing only an athletic supporter, which is
an example of something they couldn't show on the air, but they could talk about it.
So again, I love that idea that, like, in another world, there was like a whole nother 250 episodes of MASH that we never saw. It was all this stuff. So he continues on with the letter, the dictation, and then Smile and Jack shows up. And again, another installment of the young Sherman Potter adventures, because he knows Smile and Jack. These two are old friends. And how do they know each other? Well, because Colonel Potter's been all over the war at this point. So again, it's another bunch of adventures that we'll never get to see from young Sherman Potter.
I thought that was interesting because, clearly Jack knows the people at the 4077, you know, because he knew that nurse was new. You know, and he was,
yeah, right. He says you're new here. That's right.
Yeah. And he's clearly comfortable in the OR, knows immediately, like, oh, the lacerated artery or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then he just hadn't seen Potter in a while. So maybe a little hint that the camp is, you know, it's bigger than we kind of feel like it is from watching this show, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. I mean, how could he have not seen? This must be his first visit to the 477th in a little while if he hasn't met Colonel Potter yet. Although maybe being a chopper pilot, he's busy. Maybe he came in, dropped the people off, and took off or something.
But, yeah, I mean, but, I wondered how often he would walk through O'Hara.
That's true, yeah. He's feeling very comfortable at the Forest. By the way, I didn't mention it. I don't think she makes another appearance in the show. The actress playing Nurse King, who we only see with her mask on, is played by Alba Francesca. Great name. She was in TV shows like Matlock, Super Train, and she actually had an appearance on Aftermath. Oddly enough, this is her first credit, is this episode of MASH. This is her only appearance on the show. So anyway, Colonel Potter talks about that he's trying to work out a trade where he says they need some streptomycin. And I love when he says to Radar, what can we trade? And Radar says, we have 2 gallons of DDT. And I just love that Smile Inject just goes, sticks his tongue out. It's like, what am I going to do with that? You know,
good face acting. And then next with the tongue depressors.
Yeah. You get 2 cases of aftershave lotion. And then of course, that strikes gold because, Spinal Jack says the 855th needs specimen bottles, which I don't know. I guess you could sterilize all those bottles and use them for that. I hope so. I don't know. It seems a little strange.
Seems it does.
Yeah. But, so then Radar leaves the letter unfinished and they do the classic. He thanks Colonel Potter before Colonel Potter. He says, you're welcome to Colonel Potter before, Colonel Potter has even a chance to thank him. And then, Smile Jack, has a present for Colonel Potter, which is a Cuban cigar. I love Potter's line about, I'll have this after dinner. And then he pauses. In fact, I'll have it for dinner, which is great. and that's where we see the beginnings of the plot kicking in, where we see Smiling Jack's hand and there's this kind of wound on it. Now, it's funny because Colonel Potter calls it a scratch, but it doesn't look like a scratch. It's circular. It looks like it's like a burn almost.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I'm like, that's some scratch.
Yeah, I mean, he got it from the Australian nurse.
Right.
Just because I wanted to go home in her pouch, as he said.
That was pretty good. That took me a couple times. but yeah, it looked like he almost, did it on an instrument or some kind.
It doesn't look like a scratch, but okay. I mean, Potter's not being terribly specific. So then Smile Jack tries to dismiss him, where he says, "You owe me for saying that was a battle injury," and he's like, "Well, you ain't lying," and he walks off. And again, they're laying it in. I like as Radar. There's a nice camera movement by Charles Dubin as Radar walks in front of the frame, and the camera pans from right to left and sort of follows the movement around Radar. We see the whole time Colonel Potter, even though he's talking to Radar, is looking out the door. He's looking at Jack. So something's up. He knows something's up. And I love that little bit of detail that it's like, okay, and we know it's going to play up later, but I like that Colonel Potter's just kind of like, okay.
Yeah, he's not hiding it. Definitely not.
Yeah. So, and that leads to, again, another great bit where Radar is reciting the letter and Colonel Potter says, you know, it's very hard to discipline doctors. And then Radar jumps in with, and Captain Pierce is no exception. And then Potter has the, did I say that? You were about to, sir. Just
got to get that in there. Radar's abilities.
Radar's little abilities. It's great. So then in the O Club, we see, as I mentioned, Smiling Jack hustling BJ and Hawkeye for drinks. And the way he hustles it is he has this spoon over it, bent over an orange, and then he flicks it up in the air. Or no, he has a tongue depressor over a spoon. He flicks the syringe in the air, and it lands straight down in the orange. And there leads to this great whole bit where Hawkeye talks about, you know, oh, he buried a magnet in the rind, and it's all glued. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. It's all the great stuff. And Jack, instead of ordering a drink, orders club soda, which both Hawkeye and BJ find to be a little curious. And once again, he kind of blows them off a little about where they kind of question it, and he just sort of just jokes. So then BJ tries to do the same thing by sending the syringe in the air, and he manages to defeat the laws of physics.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
We see the syringe go straight up, and then we cut to Colonel Potter walking in, and somehow the syringe goes into the door like Robin Hood shot it. I would love to know how the physics work in the O Club at the 407 set.
Exactly. I can imagine them on set pondering that and then going, That's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. All right. It doesn't matter. Fine. You know, whatever. And I have to wonder, I'm guessing it doesn't look reversed. The footage, it looks like it, you know, you can kind of tell when something gets reversed, it always has a quite unreal look to it. No. But I wonder how they got the syringe in there. I mean, it's obviously a prop. It's not a real syringe. It's probably metal, but nevertheless, they, you know, somebody had to throw that pretty hard and get it to go like kind of, you know, bounce a little just as Colonel Potter goes in. Whoever threw it, they probably had to do it like 50 times to get it right.
Must have, yeah. I don't know. Hide a dart in there or something? I don't know.
Something. So Colonel Potter shows up. And again, I like the detail that he is wearing his colonel's hat, which I like. I like he's sort of like, this is official business here. And he does the whole thing with how many club sodas does he stick you for? Again, I love Colonel Potter knows that it's club soda. He knows that. And then he has the line about, he stuck me for 17 one night. Again, another adventure that we never saw. And then it said Colonel Potter insists that he undergo a complete physical. And that's the end of end of the act break.
Yeah, Potter's tone is very, you know, serious and almost hard here. And I think it's like all of his history with Jack, and now he can't figure out, you know, Jack's hiding something.
Yeah.
And that's coming up, I think.
Yeah, and he says it very, he takes it very seriously. He's like, I'm afraid that's an order. And that's it. That's it. So then we see they're examining Jack, and we talk about Hawkeye. He talks about his physique. You know, he said, look, you live 40, 50 years tops. They need him. It's a runner with the specimen bottles gag where they need him to, they give him a wine bottle to fill. And, you know, Jack is like, what is this? He's like, somebody swiped our specimen bottles, which of course we know were swiped because they were traded. It's probably part of Radar's trade. So again, I love the idea that, somehow Jack has to, he's not going to fill it. And even has the line about get your 12 cents back on the bottle, which is,
yes, that was good. And so smooth. Yeah. I like the creativity, like Radar, you know, Radar knew, and they'll figure it out. They'll be creative.
Mm-hmm.
Be
fine. Mm-hmm. So then I like after, he puts up an argument again, Hawkeye and BJ basically say, all right, you know, level with us. What, and he would say, what does Potter suspect? And then he does the symptoms. You know, he's always thirsty, takes forever to heal, and they realize, oh, he's got diabetes. And he says, they talk about the insulin, and he's like, you know, you must, the needle, you get a lot of practice. And Jack kind of blows it off, and he says, I only need it once a day, sometimes twice. Hawkeye says, is that all? And then he finally kind of admits, sometimes three times. And then Hawkeye has an interesting line. He says, that's what Bela Lugosi said. And for years, I always thought that joke was a Dracula joke. That Hawkeye was saying, oh, well, Bela Lugosi equals Dracula, and Dracula needs to drink blood a lot. I always thought that was a joke. It wasn't until I got older and I read about Bela Lugosi's drug habit, which, of course, was chronicled in the movie Ed Wood, one of my favorite movies of all time. But that was actually a fairly famous case. So that's probably what the joke is that Hawkeye is referencing Bela Lugosi's drug problem.
Yeah, I think so. Although it works either way. So
it does work either way. Right. As a kid, the joke the joke kind of makes sense. You're like, okay.
Right.
Because Dracula is like a drug addict, essentially.
Somehow that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're just as a kid, you just like when stuff doesn't make sense to you, you piece together a meaning for yourself, even if it makes no sense whatsoever.
Yep.
But it's like as a kids can't stand not knowing stuff. So they just kind of go, all right, well, it must mean this. But of course, it doesn't mean that at all. But I mean, I wonder in 1953, like, or this is 51, 52, like, was Lugosi's drug problem that famous that Hawkeye knew about it? But you know, of course, this is later on that the writers knew about him, but Lugosi had died a long time ago at that point. But yeah, it was one of those things where I was like, as a kid, oh, that's Dracula. And then I got older, I'm like, no, he's literally talking about Bela Lugosi.
And they layer stuff in here. I love the, I mean, you know, what can you say about the writers? And I love the delivery of Jack when he says, well, maybe three times. Like, he's just twinkling away. Like, you know, his entire career is going down in that moment. And he just, you know, he kind of takes it in stride in a way.
Yeah, I mean, right. He's lying, but he's sort of charming about it. And yeah, the way he does have that kind of smile, well, sometimes three times. He just kind of, like, you kind of know if you keep pressing him, he'll eventually give you the truth. But you got to kind of get it out of him. He won't just offer it immediately.
And no matter what, like whether he has insulin one time a day or three times a day, like his career is, you know, he's not a pilot anymore.
Yeah. You can't, yeah, you cannot be risking having a seizure of any kind or blacking out while you're flying a chopper, for Pete's sakes. I mean, that's really not safe. So now we're back in post-op, and BJ talks to Owens again, and he talks about, Owen says, I don't want to go back to the fighting. And of course, BJ's like, you know, that sounds serious. Sounds like you're coming down with mental health. And then he asks BJ, have you ever been to the front? And BJ says, never had the pleasure. What the hell is BJ talking about? He's been to the front a bunch of times. We've already seen it. He's been to the front in Dirt Tag. He was at the front during Welcome to Korea, for Pete's sakes.
Yeah.
I don't know what the – I mean, I'm guessing unless BJ's being very specific, meaning I have never been at the front lines, like in the foxholes or something.
Right, with my fellow comrades next to me. Yeah. I don't know.
That's kind of what – I'm assuming that's what he's meaning. And we see it again, like in every episode virtually featuring BJ. He's a great – not only is he a great surgeon, as we know, but he's a great doctor. He's a great comforter. Because this poor kid is terrified. And in fact, he starts talking about, is there something wrong with me that I keep going back to the fighting? And BJ just says, well, some people take orders better than others. You're a good order taker, which is a very kind way of putting it across to this guy, saying, don't worry about it. You're not mentally defective because you won't go AWOL. You're just somebody who listens to orders they were given, and don't worry about it. And it's BJ's just a marvelous doctor all around.
It's really, he's being very gentle, and I love this whole exchange. Like Owen says, I just keep going back, like me, like without me, there's no war. Which is, you know, it's kind of a wry thought in that moment.
The shoes that the Chinese wear, and they squeak, and that's what the nurses wear rubber soled shoes, and that's what it sounds like when they're in the hospital. And again, it's a great little bit of detail that he's relaying. And then a radar bursts in, telling him that Jack has taken off. And BJ says, "One of you ask radar to stay with Owens and comfort him." He says, "We're talking about fear." And of course, radar's like, "That's my best thing." So,
and it's accompanied by like a classic radar shoulder shrug.
Yeah. You're like, okay, yeah, that's my best thing. So then we're in radar's office, and Potter is trying to get Jack to come back, and we see Hawkeye there listening in, and I love he's got what a weird detail. He's got this drumstick.
Yes,
he's just chewing this drum. I don't know why they thought to do this. And even BJ even asked, where'd you get that? And Hawkeye's like, the Petrified Forest. Is they still open? It's just like, I guess it was like, we want Hawkeye in the scene because we just want Colonel Potter to have somebody to play off of. But it's just like I guess Hawkeye's like, or Alan Alda's like, he just wants some bit of business. But it's just like, what a weird detail to give him a chicken bone to sit there and eat while he's talking.
It really is. And it wasn't just something Alda picked up clearly because there's dialogue around it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, I don't think we've ever seen them munching away on one of those in the mess tent.
No, they keep talking about how, like, you know, the food there is so not fresh. And obviously he's eating chicken on the bone. That's relatively fresh, you know? Yeah. It looked like KFC or something. So, all right. I mean, you can see why BJ would be a little jealous of it. So then we establish that Smiling Jack is trying to pick up four more wounded to win this contest. Now, first of all, he can't – how do you pick up four people in a chopper? That's incredibly unsafe. Yeah. And he's risking the lives of some of these guys just for this record. But I also – the thing that floored me about this, even as a kid, this contest makes no sense.
No. No. No.
Is there any way – right.
You cannot win.
Like, how can they possibly – draw a line and say no more after this, like unless it's midnight on December 31st or something. Like this, there's no way to ascertain how many anybody's bringing in because it's constant. So even as a child, I was like, this contest is ridiculous.
Yeah, they're fighting for you know, that one moment of glory that they know is going to go away because the war is not ending.
Yeah. I mean, like, how are they establishing this at all? It just doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah.
So then we cut back to Radar talking to Owens, and he talks about his fear about his Uncle Ed catching him with the looking at his National Geographics, you know, the Africa pictures. And, you know, that's when Owens tells the story about the sneakers that the Chinese wear, and Radar didn't know that. So then finally, Radar gives Owens his lucky four-leaf clover, which is flattened because he said he had it in his pocket when a Jeep ran over him.
It's lucky.
So, again, an episode we never saw where Radar got run over by a Jeep. That's a great, great detail. And I love the way Dennis Court, his line reading, where he's sort of shocked. And he's like, gee, you're a nice guy.
Yeah.
And Radar has that great line, well, I used to get hit if I wasn't.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, old school, you know, kind of parenting, but also very sweet in its own way of that's how important being a nice person was to his uncle or his mother was. That's how serious it was. Like, you would get hit if you wasn't a nice guy.
I looked at it being in Omaha. I looked at it as like, you know, nice Omaha or nice Iowa farm boy, you know, raised to be nice.
Be a nice guy. So then Colonel Potter starts talking about another pilot that he knew, Duncan McShane. Again, another installment of the Young Sherman Potter Chronicles. I never met Duncan McShane. Who he talks about, he used to throw grenades from his chopper at targets, which is, again, gutsy. Like, that, give that guy a show. The Duncan McShane show. I mean, where he's just throwing grenades at people. And he talks about that one time he threw a grenade and the wind dropped it right back in his lap. Which both Hawkeye and BJ find incredibly funny. And he says he threw it out in time, but you couldn't tell him anything either. And then we talk about Jack is going to pick up – he's going to try and pick up four, and he says they're going to have to be small. And BJ has a line about drafting Boy Scouts. And then Potter has the line about horsepower, and he says they're just regular horsepower just is not enough to lift them. And we see that. We see that exactly happen. The chopper struggling to take off. And it's kind of – I don't know about you. I mean, it's scary to me in a way to, like, be in this thing that is so clearly struggling mightily to take off. I mean, obviously, if you're wounded, you're not worrying about it. But, man, it's really scary. To me, it's scary watching it because it's like this thing is just – a bunch of metal and plastic, and somehow it's carrying five people.
Yeah, and somehow his will alone is going to get it off the ground. And if I was one of those two soldiers, like, crammed inside with him, I do believe I would be terrified because I'm not wounded enough to be laying down, right?
Yep.
And I'm kind of, like, hanging on for all I'm worth, you know, half hanging out of the chopper.
Yep.
And it's clearly having a hard time getting off the ground. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just watching it when you see it, like, and then it doesn't quite, and then it flumps back down. It's like, oh my god, it's really scary. Now, this episode is one of the most weirdly edited in syndication because when I saw it in my local affiliate, the second act ends with Colonel Potter saying, "If he manages to bring back four soldiers, I want to give him a medal, and then I want him locked up." That's where the episode ends. The second act ends there in syndication. And then for the button scene, which is normally 30 to 45 seconds,
it's
the whole conclusion of the show, which runs for like 2 minutes. It's the most weirdly paced. Even as a child, I could, you know, having seen enough MASHes, I was able to pick up on the rhythms of how MASH worked. You know, it's like, okay, there's the opening credits, then a commercial, then the main act, then the second main act, and then a little scene at the end. And I remembered watching this going, wow, this final scene is really long. Like, it's just so I have no idea why it's cut like that, but that isn't the way this episode is normally cut.
And the action hasn't even come back down yet.
No.
It's so weird.
No, it's very, very strange. Yeah. So we get back on the chopper pad, and Jack is thrilled because he's like, I did it. I'm chopper pilot of the year, and I don't care anymore. And then, of course, there's this interesting sequence where they don't really tell the audience what exactly is happening. You just have to kind of surmise it, where BJ says, let's have it. And Jack gives him some sort of insignia out of his pocket. And then BJ extends his hand a second time. and Jack pulls off the thing off of his collar. And then he does it a third time. And then Jack gives him a third one. And they don't explain what these things are. I don't still don't know what they are. They're obviously some sort of credentials. Well, the first two are credentials in somehow. And then the third one is the insulin needle. Yeah. But they don't explain why Jack can't fly because he doesn't have those two pins in his lapel. Like,
right. I'm like, is it symbolic? Like, were one of the things he took, like, I don't know, his little wings. And so somehow that symbolism would keep Jack on the ground. Sure.
Yeah, it's a very strange. Know. Yeah, it's a very. They just said they don't bother to tell the audience of what it means. I guess it's just like his official credentials or something. I don't know, but I mean,
and the syringe. I was like, well, he kind of needs the syringe.
He does kind of need the syringe. Yeah. I'm guessing they're like, you're going to stop giving it to yourself. We'll give it to you.
Yeah.
And so then we cut to Jack having completed the trade, and he's not mad at Colonel Potter. You know, he says, I hate to be the one that call on you, Jack. And Jack says, don't worry about it, Colonel Potter. And then, you know, obviously, as you said, Robert Hogan, very charming. And he just kind of glints his eye at Colonel Potter and walks out. So obviously he knew that the jig was up at some point. And I guess it's almost like if you're going to get caught, you might as well get caught by your pal as opposed to somebody else who might have been a little harsher about it.
Yeah, and get caught with style. I mean, he just had a good nature about it the whole time.
So then they're doing triage, and they say Owens is going back to the war. He talks to Radar one more time, and he says, just keep down low, all right? And then we, our two characters, meet each other again, where Jack talks about, says, where are you headed? And he's like, back up to the front. And he says, they're taking me out of the game. And it's at that moment that both Hawkeye and BJ notice the two of them getting in the bus together. And of course, this is the unfairness of war, is that Jack desperately wants to stay in the war and he can't. And Owens wants nothing to do with the war and he can't get out of it. And so, it's a great way to dovetail the two storylines.
Yeah, it is. And Owens thinking, a game? Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's just it's really very, very tragic. And so we see I love that. As they're rounding up, Radar says about the running up blood donors. Jack goes, you want a pint? Extra sweet? And then he says, okay, let's a little respect for the chopper pilot of the year. And then, of course, you hear the choppers, and Radar says, I don't think so, sir. And he says, Dangerous Dan? Yep. And he's bringing in three more. And again, this contest makes no sense. It just makes no sense at all. But okay, fine.
None at all, but also I kind of wanted Radar to stay quiet so that, you know, Jack could have that final little victory before getting off the bus, you know, or on the bus.
Well, Jack does hear it because he's about to get on the bus and then you hear the blah, 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 blah. And he just kind of has that shrug of like, all right. And he climbs into the bus. Yeah. And that's where the episode, when I saw it in syndication, ends. It ends with that, and then they cut to the credits. But in the full episode has the traditional button scene, again, which is something I didn't see until I got the DVDs, where it's Hawkeye and BJ and Potter in surgery, and Potter is telling more stories about Duncan McShane, talking about flying a plane into the hangar twice. And then there's some – we hear some bombs going off. And Hawkeye has the line about, you've been through three wars, which one is the worst? Hawkeye says, of the three wars, which is the worst? And Potter waits and hears the PA come over say, by the close of today's fighting, the battalion of the Gloucester Regiment lost 500 of its 600 men, which is a real event. That's a real event from the Korean War. And Potter says, everyone, Hawkeye, everyone. And that's the episode pans out on the three of them operating. And that's the end of the episode. Again, it's a nice melancholy ending to what is, you know, it's kind of a lighter hearted show, not so much with the Owen stuff, but a lighter hearted in that, as we talked about, Jack is very charming and his big problem is that he's not going to be the contest winner. So it's like stakes are relatively low for Jack.
Yeah. I mean, the ending is, you know, if you've seen enough MASH, you recognize it as a classic MASH exchange, you know, with each and everyone, Hawkeye, each and everyone.
Yeah, it's a great way to end it.
And the show, yeah, I mean, it's really lighthearted overall, but like, there's little things that if you stop to think, you're like, oh, like when BJ and and Houlihan are doing rounds, and the first soldier they come to has his like half of his face bandaged because
because
he had put his own eye socket back in.
Yes, his eye popped out and he put his own eyeball back in. Oh,
little things like that, you know, like. Good on MASH.
Even BJ comments on that. He's like, oh, boy, you know, he's like, you're doing our job for us over here. Like, oh, man, that guy's,
And the kid's like, I was the first one there.
Oh, man. I mean, I don't know. I think you should get sent home automatically if you put your own eyeball back in.
Yes, I think so.
It's giving me the shivers.
So that's classic MASH right there, you know.
Oh, my Lord. So it is worth mentioning that there is no Klinger or Mulcahy in this episode.
Yeah.
They don't appear. Margaret does appear, but she's in it. She's in it
very briefly.
So overall in this episode, do you have a particular favorite line or joke from the show?
You know, I knew you were going to ask this, of course, but I like in at the end when, you know, Jack and Potter are reconciling in a way after Jack comes back down, and neither of them are mad at the other, and Jack just says, a few sitting lessons and I'll be able to solo at a desk in no time. I just love that. I mean, it's what a comical pilot might say. I like that.
I also like the idea that at least he's maybe not going home.
Yeah.
Like he can still, you know, he'll be in supply or something.
Yeah.
Like he can still.
He's going to keep his sense of humor. He's not going to lose his sparkle. I mean, he might have some hard times, but
I wonder if he ever got that date with Nurse King.
I don't think he's going to be wanting for attention wherever he goes, I'm guessing.
Probably not. Yeah. Robert Hogan was a very handsome man.
I was taking notes, and I have several times in the notes. Boy, there's that smile. Oh, look at those sparkly eyes. Just
really, really working for you, Lori?
It was. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, later on in later episodes, we'll meet other chopper pilots, and Margaret likes one of the chopper pilots. So clearly, the chopper pilots are, you know, again, the big men on campus here at the 477. So, for me, I mentioned my favorite. In a lot of ways, my favorite joke is Hawkeye's look at the whole. That's disgusting. Like, I just love how aghast he looks at that. But in terms of a line, I like when Jack and Potter are talking about the cigars. And Jack talks about that MacArthur smokes these. And Potter says, I'll probably develop an urge to walk on the water, which is Potter cannot, like, he's not really supposed to joke like that because MacArthur is their commander. But nevertheless, the joke that MacArthur thinks that he walks on the water, and it's so wonderfully delivered by Harry Morgan.
It really is. And like, you know, some people would not get that watching it, but it's that little nugget there for those of us who know anything about MacArthur.
Yeah, MacArthur's reputation. It's a great, and he does it while he's got the cigar in his mouth too. So he even does the line while he's like, Roger, nerds will walk on the water. really great gag. So, Smile and Jack, it's another real winner of an episode. I will say, I think later on in MASH's run in the later seasons, I think they leaned a little too heavily on the X shows up to the camp storyline, because they just think it's a little bit of a kind of a lazy detail.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, the box, you know, oh, a boxer shows up, and oh, this famous war correspondent shows up, and oh, this other war correspondent shows up. You know, I'm sure as you're running into the 9th, 10th seasons of a show and you're running out of plots, you lean on some of the tried and true, which is let's bring in a guest star. But at this point, season 4, they still hadn't done that all that much. So bringing in a character that we've never seen before, although I did mention in previous episodes, we did see a background character at one point, a chopper pilot with that coat and a yellow cap in the back of the O Club. It's obviously not Robert Hogan, but it's whoever they dressed in that episode. They clearly decided to keep that uniform around and give it to Smiling Jack. So it's a nice bit of continuity that you can say, oh, that was Jack there. He's just in the back talking to another nurse. But MASH was still doing guest appearances relatively sparingly this season. I mean, earlier on with Dear Peggy, when Ned Beatty shows up, that's only like one part of a plot line, of course. Although, of course, the very next episode of MASH features another person showing up out of nowhere. So I'm kind of – my own point is getting destroyed as I'm saying it. But for the most part, MASH – didn't lean on it as heavily, and so it wasn't as much of a cliche, and so it works. That okay, this episode is mostly about the chopper pilot and the sort of chaos that he brings to 477. So again, another really great episode of a great season.
Yeah, and I like the way they brought him in, because it wasn't someone coming in to interact mostly with one person. It was, you know, a big camp like this, even though it doesn't seem that way to us. Like, people are always coming and going, and there's, you know, there's dozens, hundreds of reoccurring characters, and Jack is, you know, just one of them coming through the camp.
Absolutely. So, Laurie, thank you so much for doing the show. Thank you so much for reaching out and wanting to do the show. I really do appreciate it. It was great talking to you.
It was great talking to you.
So why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
Sure. People can find me on Twitter. I'm at Lori Nahni. That's LORINAHNI.
All right. Very cool. So, of course, everybody, if you want to find back episodes of this show, go to our website, findwaterpodcast.com. We're always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. You can subscribe to MASHcast on any of the podcatchers of your choice. And then finally, if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW podcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Britt Schramm, Mike Thomas, and Michael Porter for their support of MASHcast. So we are going to be back in 2 weeks. No show next week. Sorry, everybody. We'll be back in 2 weeks to wrap up season 4 of MASH with the final 3 episodes of season 4. And they are, all of them are a doozy. So we'll be back in 2 weeks for the MASHcast. But until then, that is all.
There's a magnet in the orange.
That's it. He peels the orange, he puts a magnet inside, and then he glues the rind back on the orange without a single seam showing, and I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.